With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's a little slower pace in the regular season. It's get kind of fat twitchy. I don't even know what that means. But it is the last hour of the work week, which means there's a chance I could make up words. It's fast twitchy during the postseason and certainly not a dull moment in October. And yet again, history on the base paths in the NLCS on Thursday, which we'll get to momentarily. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. One game in the books from week 7 in the NFL. We're asking you to choose the after hours game of the week. So we're getting a lot of votes already on Twitter, A-Law Radio. There's a poll, or on our Facebook page, because I'm cheating and posting under someone else's page. Whatever, Facebook, it's your fault. And I'm going to stop right there. Our phone number, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. I feel like I can still smell the burnt bacon. Some guy, again, thought he would pile on and tell me how to cook bacon as if that were the problem. Yes, I burnt the bacon because I didn't know how to cook it. I can't read instructions on a package and I don't know how to turn on the oven. Oh, heavens. That's not what happened. I got distracted by baseball. We're inside the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need cash out of your home and a simple way to get it, Rocket can. The part that sucks the most is that I was planning on putting that bacon on top of my loaded potato soup. So then that didn't work. Plus, I'm making a spicy pumpkin corn chowder this weekend, if I have time. I may not be able to move on Sunday. But if I do cook this weekend my spicy corn chowder with the pumpkin, it's supposed to have bacon on it as well. And now all I have are these crispy sticks. It's just annoying. Because I started it. I was all excited. I just wanted to put it back in the oven for a couple more minutes to make it a little crispier. And then I started watching baseball. And that was the end of that. This happens to me in October. My brain is going... Talk about fast twitchy, a bazillion miles a minute. And I start one thing and then I pull myself away and get distracted by 8 other things. Ah, it's time for a good long hike in the mountains, don't you think? So what is the after hours game of the week? Again, Twitter, Facebook, we'll take your calls though. About a half hour from now, we're going to head to Vegas to talk about Ben Simmons. It'll all make sense. Let's begin with game 5 of the NLCS. Now, this is not a tie series, right? We talked to you about the ALCS with the notion that the winner of game 5 would have a 70% chance, or history shows that the winner of game 5 in a tie series goes on to advance 70% of the time. But the Braves had enhanced their position of strength. After getting stunned in game number 3, they rallied in game number 4 and had a brilliant pitching performance from their bullpen. Plenty of timely hitting. Eddie Rosario and Adam Duvall with both the home run and the defense. We know Freddie Freeman's bat has woken up recently. So the Braves, here they are with the chance to close out. And they get on the board first in Los Angeles in game number 5. Once again, Freddie Freeman, a big stick, a 2-run home run in the top of the first. Just like that, the Braves are up. And I'm thinking, oh, man. The Dodgers' starting pitching woes have finally caught up with them. They can only throw so many bullpen guys out there and expect it to work against a lineup as good as the Braves. And right on cue, Joe Kelly asks out. A sore shoulder or a bicep, something like that, in his throwing arm, and he couldn't continue. And so now this forces Dave Roberts into a very precarious position. He was planning on using his bullpen extensively, but he wasn't planning on using it right then. The only thing that the Dodgers could do to spare their postseason lives, well, they got a hit. and their bats have been feast or famine. I've likened this a little bit to the defense for the Kansas City Chiefs and what Patrick Mahomes and his offense are expected to do. When your defense is giving up more than 30 points per game and it's got the highest points scored against average in the NFL, well, then your offense better damn sure be generating at least as much offense, or what's going to happen? You're going to have a losing record. You're going to have a terrible season. That's the pressure that's on Mahomes and his offense. Well, that's kind of the pressure that's on the Dodgers and their offense, except they've been feast or famine. Remember, two games against the Giants, they were completely shut out. And against the Braves, they've had games where there was nothing. Game number four on Wednesday night, top five hitters go 0-17. Then they lose Justin Turner. Max Muncy's already out. Except you have no choice. You got to fight back. In walks Albert Pujols, AJ Pollock, Chris Taylor. Stop me if you've heard this before about Chris Taylor.
Freed delivers, and that one is hammered to left, and it's on its way, and it is gone, a home run! Just like that, the Dodgers have a 3-2 lead. Taylor loops one into center field, that's going to drop in for a base hit. Pollock will score, Pujols holds at second base, the Dodgers lead 4-2. And Chris Taylor has knocked in three. Chris Martin set at the chest, now delivers. And there's a fly ball to center field. Racing on back is Duvall, and it is gone! This night is tailor-made. Chris Taylor, a two-run home run. The Dodgers now lead it 6-2, and he has knocked in five. The 2-2, Taylor with a fly ball to deep left center field. Chris Taylor has hit his third home run of the night and becomes the 11th different player in baseball history with three home runs in a postseason game.
That's just a handful of baseball players, and Chris Taylor has joined yet another elite group. Remember when he had the walk-off against the Cardinals in the wild card game? He was only the fifth in baseball history ever to deliver a walk-off home run in a winner-take-all playoff game. And now here he is in select company again. Listen to this line. In an elimination game, 4-for-5, 3 home runs, 6 RBI. Now, here's the funny part. I love these quirky stories in Major League Baseball. The elder statesman of the group, Albert Pujols, who scored ahead of Chris Taylor multiple times last night because he also had 2 hits and a walk, he's one of the other guys in baseball history ever to accomplish this feat.
Seeing CT, you know, have it performing like this is pretty special. I mean, unbelievable guy, great teammate. You know, I had an opportunity to play against him when he was in Seattle. Now, having him as my teammate is pretty special. And just the preparation that he goes day in and day out every day, stuff that you guys don't get to see, but the players get to see, is that's why he has the success that he has at the plate.
Meanwhile, for Albert Pujols, this is obviously a dream since he joined the Dodgers, and he's going to be pressed into duty more often, however long they go, because Justin Turner is not available and Dave Roberts is having to retool that roster and also his defensive lineup again. But that's kind of where the versatility of Cody Bellinger and Chris Taylor come into play, because he can mix and match Corey Seager, Trey Turner. I mean, obviously Trey's had to change positions since he went to Los Angeles. And so the way that the offense responded, probably not a huge surprise. I think I was far more impressed, because we know what the bats can do. I was far more impressed with what the pitching was able to do the rest of the way. I kept waiting for the Braves to break out. Dave Roberts has to kind of piece this together again. 7 different pitchers, all out of the bullpen, only give up 5 hits to the Atlanta Braves through the rest of last night's game.
Each guy that came in, I mean, I can go on and on about each guy, and they were all fantastic. And obviously what, you know, Brustar did with Blake and, you know, Vessi, all the guys were fantastic.
It seems like this whole series we've been switching off games here, winning late, they win late. We score a lot yesterday, they score a lot today. It's just kind of how it's been going. It's 2 good teams going at it, and kind of this is what we figured.
That's Freddie Freeman, who's obviously the leader of the Braves, and his bat has been a big key in why the Braves have developed this 3-2 lead. But of course, no one's going to stop asking about what happened last year. Or someone even brought up the Falcons' collapse in the Super Bowl to the Patriots a few years ago, which I think is a low blow, a very low blow. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Here's the bottom line, though. The Braves get to go home with a 3-2 lead. Two games to get to the World Series. One win in two games to get to the World Series. Clearly, they are capable of that. And this is a team that's been pushed. They've been pushed to the brink. They faced adversity, both in the form of injuries and just in general, putting themselves in a big hole in the regular season. So obviously, they're capable. No, Max Fried didn't have his best stuff. Brian Snitker says, I was hoping he would pitch into the seventh or at least pitch deeper into the game, and that didn't happen. So they saw the pendulum swing back the other direction, but still, they're going home, and they have a 3-2 lead.
I have no worries at all. You know, I think it'll be good to get back home, and we got to... You know, it's a tough road to hoe when we get home. But, you know, these guys will come out on, Friday and Saturday. And, you know, they'll do like they did yesterday. They're going to prepare. They're going to give it everything they got like they always do.
So Brian Snitker is feeling like me a little bit, the days blending together, which is understandable. Travel day Friday, Dodgers head to Atlanta. Well, Atlanta heads to Atlanta as well. And they will take on, they'll take on this opportunity here to win one more game and lock in a World Series trip. Dodgers and Braves, not until Saturday. Now, I wonder, I'm just speculating here, I don't know that it's going to end this way, if the Astros do eliminate the Red Sox on Friday, so that's their Game 6 in Houston, Nathan Eovaldi, Luis Garcia, whether or not Major League Baseball will alter the time, the start time of the NLCS, but we'll cross that bridge if and when we come to it. But yes, elimination game tonight for the Red Sox in Houston and an elimination game on Saturday for the Dodgers in Atlanta. And both home teams have the advantage and will have the huge crowds behind them. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Home crowd, a big reason why the Cleveland Browns were successful on Thursday night to kick off week 7 in the NFL, but also running back you. That's what came to mind when I was watching not just the offensive line, but also the running of one D'Ernest Johnson, third string back, who got his first career NFL start. And not only did he seize the day, but this turned into a dream come true for him.
From the 4, why not? Give it to Johnson. He's off a rub hit. He going to the goal line. Touchdown! How about that? He's got the snap. Back to pass. In the pocket. He's going to load up. He's going into the end zone. It's picked off! They got it! John Johnson, the 3rd, picked it off in the end zone! Keenum's got it, and he's going to give the ball, and here comes D'Ernest Johnson. He's to the 15. He's going to get there. He got to the 12. First down at the 12-yard line. 58 seconds left. Denver can't stop the clock.
Give that man a game ball.
Listen to First Energy Stadium. Just listen.
Pretty sweet night for one D'Ernest Johnson and, of course, the offensive line, not to mention Case Keenum, who engineers a win for the first time in 2 years. And here are the Browns. I'm really impressed with Kevin Stefanski, his coaching staff, but also the effort and the preparation by the team itself, because they're coming off not only a short work week and playing on Thursday, but they're down so many guys. No Baker Mayfield, of course, and now we find out he has a fractured bone as well as the torn labrum and the shoulder that's been dislocated, so we don't know about his status, though they do have the mini bye here before they play the Steelers on Thanksgiving. But no Nick Chubb and no Kareem Hunt, and D'Ernest Johnson wasn't drafted out of South Florida, spent time working on a fishing boat, then playing his way through the AAF before he could get an opportunity. And he goes for 146 yards on 22 carries with his first and only career touchdown. Pretty amazing. And so not only was his team really excited for him, but as you can imagine, he was a little bit in awe. He even said, when I got in the end zone, I didn't know what to do. I wasn't exactly sure how to celebrate.
Coming from, the fishing boat. You know, I always dreamed of playing in the NFL. You know, just playing in the AAF. At the same time, I always dreamed of getting here and just being able to be on this team is a blessing. And like I say, man, it's always a dream come true just to be here and just to be able to play, you know, and start and just come out and help the team win. You know, that's the best feeling.
You hate injury. You really do. I mean, it's really tough part of this game. But it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Unfortunately, some people are going to get hurt. But at the same time, you love other young guys getting chances. And a guy like him who the locker room loves, everybody loves, great young family and just a good overall person.
So, again, congratulations to D'Ernest Johnson. I hope there are more opportunities for him. Both Chubb and Hunter out with calf injuries. We're not exactly sure how long it will take. And Case Keenum, same thing. I mean, the smile on his face. And he played well. I mean, he didn't have to be dynamic. He didn't have to be flashy. The game plan was the same. Control the ball and you control the game. They dominated time of possession. I think it was 37 minutes to about 23 for the Broncos, and there were no turnovers. So that's huge for Case Keenum, huge for the offense, no turnovers. As for the Denver Broncos, it's now a four-game skid, and there's no other place to look except for inside their own locker room.
We just got to play better. We got to coach better. No, I don't want to be remiss in saying that. We've got to coach better, and we've got to adjust to what we have right now.
That's Vic Fangio, who is no doubt feeling the seat getting warmer and warmer. Broncos are not generally a team that fires a coach in the middle of a season, and it doesn't make much sense to do it now unless he's lost the locker room, they're not paying attention to him. Doesn't seem like I'm hearing that yet, but a four-game skid is a four-game skid. After starting out 3-0, it turns out to be a house of cards. A little bit later on, Von Miller, who I appreciate, says, my pride is injured more than my actual ankle, but we'll let you hear from him specifically. So Browns are back above 500, and now we look at the rest of the AFC North. Steelers have a bye, but what about that game between the Ravens and the Bengals? I can imagine that Browns fans are now rooting for Cincinnati because they want to bring the Ravens back down to the pack just a little bit. That's one of our candidates for After Hours Game of the Week. So check out the poll on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and then also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. A few minutes away from getting the skinny on Ben Simmons, this whole Philadelphia mess with a team meeting looming on Friday. But in between now and then, a little more on week 7 in the NFL. It's great to have you with us. We're hurtling our way toward the weekend after hours on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
First down and goal. Keenum takes the snap. He's going to throw. He's throwing for Stanton. Touchdown! Left corner up the end zone!
Off the field, on the money, and after hours, it's time to talk football with Amy Lawrence.
Jim Donovan on the Browns Radio Network. Always enjoyable to listen to him. I can understand why Browns fans are so fond of him, the excitement, the energy, and what a performance last night for D'Ernest Johnson, as well as Case Keenum, and the defense, and the offensive line. So here's the major disparity. 182 rushing yards for Cleveland, only 41 for Denver. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. It's funny that we talk about rushing yards, and of course we're thinking about Johnson and thinking about some of the other guys that they put out there, like Felton. But Case Keenum had several carries. One of them most significant. Final minute of the third quarter. And there's a fourth down play, a fourth and three. They're inside the red zone. And so they know the Broncos are creeping. The Broncos are at this point just trailing by 3 points. And Cleveland has had trouble scoring in this second half. And so they go for it on fourth down. Keenum drops back, looks around quickly. It's not like he waited. But then the offensive line parts the Red Sea in front of him. And after he does a couple of quick checks for open receivers and doesn't see any, he sees this huge chasm in the offensive line. And so he takes off. Now, he gets close to the first down marker, and a tackler comes up on him. He kind of twists and busts past the tackler, stretches out, where he promptly drops the football, but it gets recovered in the end zone by a Brown. Now, it's not a touchdown, but at least they didn't lose possession. Instead, they end up with a first and goal, and then they score the touchdown that you just heard on the Browns radio network. So kind of crazy how football and really every sport is a game of inches, and there are these moments that you look back on. But the decision to go for it on fourth down and to see Case then decide to take off as opposed to waiting for someone else to get open when you're in tight quarters there in the red zone, Stefanski said he believed they could get it done.
In these scenarios, you believe in your guys, and we think the it makes sense to do it. But like I've said to you before, we won't do that just for the sake of doing it. We're doing it because we think we have a chance to get a first down in that situation, get a chance to get 7 points in that situation. And as you saw, that was important.
Yeah, it was huge. They end up getting the touchdown on the next play. Two really long drives, by the way. The Broncos had scored to open the third quarter on a 7-minute possession. And then this was the answer by the Browns, though they nearly lost the football right there on the goal line. And so getting to recover it and getting it to the end zone, huge. They make it a 10-point lead again, and they're able to hold off the Broncos down the stretch. And part of that was getting enough first downs on their final possession to not give the ball back to the Broncos. And that's huge. That's the idea behind going for it on fourth down in a lot of cases. You don't want the ball in the hands of your opponent. You want to control the ball. You control the ball. You control the game. And the Browns did that in a variety of ways. Now, Von Miller had made some pretty strong statements about the way that he was going to put all kinds of pressure on the offensive line for the Browns, the way that he was going to take responsibility. He wasn't going to guarantee a win, but he was going to guarantee a couple of sacks, and he was going to put it on himself to make this happen for Denver.
You know, if I can play well and I can get sacks and I can find a way, you know, to disrupt the game, you know, we'll win. So the pressure's on me to play well. I will play well. I don't know who the tackle is and I'm going against, but I'm going to kill him. I'm going to kill him and the other guy, too, on the other side. And I'm going to play extremely well, and I'm going to make plays for my team. And, I'm going to set us up to win this game for sure.
So those were Von Miller's very pointed comments a couple days before the game kicked off. Unfortunately for him, while he did have a tackle for loss, he was typical Von Miller early in the game, he steps on the foot of a teammate, rolls his ankle just before halftime. And as you can imagine, the Broncos sideline all holding its collective breath as he hobbles off the field. Turns out the x-rays were negative, and he was able to talk to the press afterwards and kind of eat his words a little bit, eat some crow.
Right when it happened and I got hit, I felt it. And, you know, I just said a quick prayer. You know, I didn't want to put any pressure on it at first. So, you know, I took it slow and, you know, I walked to the tent. I got in the tent. They checked it out. They tested it in all directions. It was good. You know, I asked them, could I run? And they said, no, just take it easy. Went in the locker room. We did the x-rays and everything felt good. Everything came out good. So I felt like I had a chance to go back out. You know, started to run and started doing some of the things that I would normally do on the football field. And it was a little tender on the inside. And, you know, it wasn't, you know, enough to get the approval from the trainers to let me go back out. So had to sit out the second half. But, I feel comfortable. Like I said before, I feel like my pride is hurt more than, you know, my ankle.
I appreciate any athlete who will cop to that. I mean, he's eating crow and his pride is more hurt because he didn't have the impact on the game that he thought he should. And clearly right now for the Broncos, they're spinning their wheels. As Teddy Bridgewater said, we just keep making the same mistakes over and over. Part of it is not being able to establish the run, but also not being able to stop the run. And they're missing guys like Bradley Chubb. They're missing guys like Jerry Jeudy. Ultimately, though, the quarterback is still a major issue. I like Teddy Bridgewater. I love his story, what he's overcome, the fact that last year was a career passing year for him. The Broncos tried to get the likes of Matthew Stafford. The price was too high. They inquired into Deshaun Watson. At that point, the Texans weren't moving him. They just have had no success in finding their next franchise quarterback. It's not easy, obviously, but the revolving door of QBs now is becoming ridiculous, and it continues to hold them back. So it kind of reminds me of what we heard from Daryl Morey, and we'll talk more about this in the final half hour of the show. But Daryl Morey in talking about why they're not just going to give Ben Simmons up, said, we're in the prime of Joel Embiid's career. This is when we need to pursue a championship with all of our resources and make the right decisions. Well, that's the case. And I know Von Miller has a Super Bowl ring, and I know that the Broncos won a Super Bowl just six years ago, right? Super Bowl 50, yes. But they're wasting what is Von Miller's prime years. I mean, he's still such a force, and this defense that they've brought in new guys and they've signed guys to stay. Just the offense has continued to be on the hamster wheel, and it doesn't get any more yards than that hamster a lot of the times. I think they had 76 yards in the first half against Cleveland on Thursday night, and then actually had more than that on their touchdown drive to open the third quarter, but it's just not enough. So the Broncos, they're in dire straits. Meanwhile, the Cleveland Browns have at least ended a bit of their misery there, and they've gotten themselves back above 500. Huge game in the AFC North with the Bengals at the Ravens coming up on Sunday in week number 7. So if you haven't yet voted for our poll or in our poll for the After Hours Game of the Week, do it. And then whether it's Twitter or Facebook, we'll see those results. It's pretty close right now between the top two candidates. Straight ahead, what the heck are the Sixers going to do? Well, Daryl Morey has his own ideas that he's sharing publicly. Maybe our friend John Kincaid, longtime friend of the show, longtime friend of mine, maybe he's got some other ideas. He will join us from Las Vegas, actually, coming up next. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. Come on, click, boom! As we wrap up the week, we contemplate the mysteries of the universe.
Boom! I just laid down the A-law. Boom!
The best highlights.
Foles running up and down the lines. A direct snap, and it goes to Clement, who gives it off to Burton, the tight end, who then throws in the end zone. Touchdown! Foles caught the ball!
And you're fire.
Thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate it. The greatest sports show in America.
Boom!
After Hours presents the Boom Moment of the Week. Here's Amy Lawrence. Boom!
Allen, under center. Sneaking. No, I don't know.
He did not make that.
I do not know. Let's see where they spot it.
He did not make that.
The Titans think they have stopped it. Let's wait. Allen tried to sneak. He got nothing, or so it appeared.
He got it. They got it. They did it. They did it. Yes. Not yes. Not yes. Hell yes.
The belief in each other never faded. The belief that we're going to get it going, they were going to take advantage of the opportunity and build off of each side of the ball, right? KB gets a pick. We're able to go answer with the score. That momentum just kept building.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
That momentum kept building for Ryan Tannehill and the Titans' run game, as well as their ability to stop the run all the way through the end into the final minute. Man, that was a moment that stopped time, not just for the Titans, not just for the Buffalo Bills, but for the NFL audience, and of course for sports fans all over the country. Pretty amazing. That's how we capped week number 6. Mike Keith and company on Titans Radio. And if you remember, it was a decision by Sean McDermott to go for it on fourth down with his 6'6 load of a quarterback instead of kick the field goal to tie. So if you don't get the points, well, you're SOL. And that's exactly what happened. The Titans were ready for it. Jeffrey Simmons and the rest of the D-line with a great push. In fact, they knocked one of Josh's offensive linemen back into him. So he lost his footing, never got traction, and the play was dead in the water. And so it was an amazing moment for the Titans. And now they have to try to translate that and to play as well as they did in that victory over the Bills into this game against the Kansas City Chiefs. Can you imagine? Nissan Stadium is going to be crazy this weekend. That's our Boom Moment of the Week. What is your After Hours Game of the Week? In fact, Chiefs-Titans is one of the candidates, but it's going neck and neck with Bengals and Ravens. There are two other games that are in our poll. I'm pretty comfortable in saying they are not going to end up being your choice for Game of the Week, but check it out on Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on my personal Twitter, A-Law Radio. Thanks again for all of your great hiking and mountain climbing tips. It is now on the horizon. In fact, this time in 24 hours, I will be just about to get in my car and head north into the Catskill Mountains. Oh my gosh. Also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Don't worry, I'll be back in time for football on Sunday. I briefly thought about taking the night off because I figure I'll be so sore that I'm going to have to wheel myself. Thankfully, all of our chairs do have wheels. I'm going to have to wheel myself into the studio, but whatever. You got to do what you got to do. At least I'll be able to talk, right? My mouth muscles and my face muscles shouldn't be sore, correct? Maybe everything else from chin down will be in pain, but at least I'll be able to talk about football. Problem is, if my arms are too sore for me to take notes, well, I could be flying blind in here. That's your boom moment of the week. What is the After Hours game of the week? Again, on Twitter or on Facebook. And our phone number, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. We told you about one of the games this weekend that has a personal connection for the quarterbacks. That is Lions at Rams. Jared Goff getting traded to Detroit in the offseason in exchange for Matthew Stafford, though it was Stafford's choice to leave, so a little bit different than Jared and the chip he carries on his shoulder. How about the other game with personal ties, with a little bit of a personal undertone? J.J. Watt, DeAndre Hopkins facing their former team when the Cardinals host the Texans. Now, the Cardinals, the only undefeated team left in the NFL. And if you watch the game between Arizona and Cleveland last week, you know that J.J. Watt had a big role. He was active. He was wreaking havoc. He was all over the backfield. I mean, he had a really good game, and he's had a couple of them together now. So, of course, he was asked about facing his former team on Sunday.
There's obviously something more to it. I don't think that it's what people may think it is, because I mean, you look at the roster and you look at the guys that are there. I mean, it's been so massively turned over that there's only a handful of guys that are even there from last year that I played with. So it's not like I'm like, oh, I want to go and beat my old team, or oh, I can't wait to face this guy, because it's not the same team. It's not the same organization that I remember and that I was a part of. So I think that once the game kicks off and once everything goes, it is just another game. And I'm looking forward to playing it, and it's going to be fun. But I, like I said at the beginning, I will always have massive love and respect for the fans of Houston and the city of Houston because of everything that they gave to me and how much I cherish my time there.
You'd be different if it was in Houston?
Probably, yeah. I would say it probably would be, yeah.
You have a favorite memory?
I have a lot of them. I mean, I met my wife there.
I was just going to say, he got married to a woman he met in Houston.
There's so many moments in on the field and off the field. I mean, winning our first ever playoff game as an organization, winning our first ever division as an organization, you know, all those things you cherish and you remember the great times. And I said just now, talking to the Houston media, that I was there for the best moments the organization's ever had, winning our first playoff game, winning division for the first time, doing things that place had never done before, and I know how unbelievable the fan base is. So that's why it hurts me to see where it is now, because I believe those fans deserve to be living those high times and to be experiencing those great moments, and it hurts to know that they're not and to know that they're struggling. And so I hope that they get back there at some point, and I hope that they get to do that, because I know firsthand it's an unbelievable place to play when you're rolling.
Love that from J.J. Watt. He's not vindictive. He's not going to be angry about it. Of course, he's on a 6-0 team, so he's in a really good spot. And the Cardinals wined and dined him, of course, to get him there. They really wanted him in town, and so he had an opportunity to not just experience the best of Texans football, but now really has a chance to compete for a Super Bowl. And so I appreciate his candor. I appreciate the fact that he's emotional and he's raw about it, and that he enjoyed so much about his time there, and that he'd probably feel different if this game was in Houston. And maybe that creates a buffer for him, so it's not too emotional. But yeah, DeAndre Hopkins is the one who got traded. I still say that was the lowest point of Bill O'Brien. I don't care what else happened. That was the beginning of the end for Bill O'Brien in Houston. He signed his own, I don't want to say death warrant, he signed his own pink slip when he did that. And it was just a matter of time. But he also took the organization down with him. It set off a domino effect that ruined the Texans for who knows how long. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Okay, we've been informed that our guest, John Kincaid, and he's a good friend, so I know he wouldn't do this to us if it weren't an emergency. He's having some equipment issues in Las Vegas as he gets ready for his morning show on 97.5 The Fanatic in Philadelphia, so he's got to attend to that. They're in Vegas to be ready for the Raiders taking on the Eagles this weekend. And so I apologize. That's live radio. It's just how it happens sometimes. So we'll catch up with John next week. But it doesn't take away from the drama or the tension in Philly with Ben Simmons. And so if you haven't heard the Daryl Morey comments on John Station 97.5 The Fanatic, wow, these are power packs. We want to let you hear a little bit of Daryl, because he was also very candid and just put it all out there, bared not so much the soul, but the business plan when it comes to Ben Simmons. And even though Simmons claimed a back injury, once he got tested by the medical staff, he was cleared to play, said, nah, left practice again on Thursday, continues to hemorrhage money from that contract that he signed. Despite all of that, Morey and Doc Rivers and the Sixers management, they actually are holding out hope this gets worked out.
We're treating it day by day that he's part of this team. And, you know, we're hoping to reintegrate him. Obviously, that doesn't look optimistic right now. I'm not I'm not here to spin your audience. But, you know, every day, you know, it's a little like Good Will Hunting. Every day, you know, we expect him to come in and move towards being able to help us on the floor, because we know we're a better team with Ben Simmons, and we know that that's the best plan for the team.
So Daryl Morey is saying, hey, we still want him to be involved. Do you remember when Doc Rivers, almost said Doc Simmons, oh dear, it's like a bad celebrity marriage, Doc and Ben. When Doc Rivers was asked, why do you guys want him? And he said, because he's a really good player. He makes us better. Now, that's not all from Morey. Morey goes on to say, they're not going to cave. In fact, they're taking what was the Houston Texans strategy in the offseason. We are not giving up a great player, an all-star athlete, for less than what we think he's worth.
This is a very good player. And to give ourselves the best chance to win the title, you need difference makers. You don't need role players. Right now, any sort of trade, which obviously Ben Simmons wants, the best thing we can do is get role players back. That makes no sense. That will give us no better chance to win the title if we were to move Ben Simmons for role players. So people should buckle in. I mean, this is going to go a long time, because our only path, my only job, is to help us give the best chance to win the title. Ben Simmons is a difference maker, so if we can get him back, he will help us win the title. If we can trade Ben Simmons for a difference maker, we will do it. I think that's best for everyone in this situation.
So Morey admits on 97.5 The Fanatic that they want to trade him. They do think that's the best way that this plays out. The problem is they're not just going to give him up. And actually, they're in a position of strength. Now, hear me on this. I know it seems crazy, right? Because they're missing their all-star point guard and he's acting like a petulant child. But he just signed a huge contract. Like Deshaun Watson, they've got him under contract through 2025. No opt-outs. No team opt-out. No player opt-out. No freaking nothing. They're tied together unless the team trades him until the offseason of 25. If Ben were to retire, guess what? Team still owns his rights. Doesn't matter. He's either going to play for the Sixers or not play for the Sixers and give up all of that money. So there's one major difference between the Texans and the Sixers. The Texans are paying Deshaun not to play. The Sixers aren't paying him a dime. In fact, he's already in the hole $2 million. He's already lost $2 million by not showing up for preseason, for practices, for workouts, for media availability, yada, yada, yada. So he's losing money. But essentially, the team is recouping some of its investment because he's not playing. And Morey says, we're taking a hard line here. We're not going to cave on this, no matter how long this goes.
You're going to think I'm kidding. I'm not. This can be 4 years. Like, the conditions that I'm pointing out to you don't change. Unless Ben Simmons is traded for a difference maker, we're in the prime of Joel's career. We have to get back either Ben Simmons playing well for us, who helps us win the championship, or we have to get back a difference maker for Ben Simmons, or this could be 4 years from now, and we're still like, hey, we took the best shot at it we could. So this could be 4 years. This is not a day-to-day. This is like every day we're going to expect Ben Simmons to be back here, or we're trading him for a difference maker. There's no other outcome that doesn't materially hurt our chance to win the championship in Joel Embiid's prime.
Once again, Daryl Morey with strong words. They're doubling down. They're digging in, whatever. And they're in a position of strength. And so there's supposed to be a meeting with Simmons coming up on Friday. We'll find out if anything develops. But why would they give him up for less than what they believe he's worth? It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. It's all the rage, this Ben Simmons talk in Philadelphia. In fact, Jason Kelce is weighing in advance of the Eagles game against the Raiders.
You write your own narrative. You know what's going on. I don't want to crush any other player. What's going on with the 76ers, Ben Simmons, stuff like that? All that is because of a lack of accountability, a lack of owning up to mistakes, and a lack of correcting things. If all that got corrected, if you're fixing free throws, if you're getting better as a player, none of this is happening. So you can, everybody can bitch and complain about, you know, how tough this city is to play in. Just play better, man. The city will love you.
That's amazing advice. Isn't that true? We gravitate toward winners. How many athletes have been in the doghouse and then the penthouse in the span of, say, a few games or a couple months or maybe a year? We are, as sports fans and really as a society, we are kings and queens of second chances and third chances and fourth chances. But it seems like it happens more in sports, and it's right in front of us. Our failures as athletes, or their failures as athletes, are so high profile. But you know what? So are their successes. There's always another chance as long as you still have someone who's willing to give you the ball. So I like that from Jason Kelce. Just play better, man. The city will love you. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks again for all of your participation this week. It's been kind of crazy. I burnt the bacon. I left the water running for about 90 seconds when I got distracted and was doing something else. At least I got part of my leaves raked, and I'm going on a mountain excursion coming up on Saturday. In fact, 24 hours from now, don't you worry. I have a contingency plan. If I don't make it home, there is someone who will walk my dog and take care of my cat. Any last words, Producer James?
Good luck. It's going to be great.
I'll talk to you guys Sunday night After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Boom!
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.